Welcome to Day Zero Update for March 24th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Xander Victor.
And yeah, we've got a big week this week of news.
Yep.
A bunch of games got dates here for the next month or two.
Mm-hmm.
One game got moved up, surprisingly.
Yep.
We got some other stuff getting announced. And yeah, some developer news that's mostly positive. One that's pretty negative, but we'll get to that stuff. But before we get to that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here. I got Rise of the Ronin out of the three Heads of Death that came out on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Between Dragon's Dogma 2, Princess Peach Showtime, and Rise of the Ronin. They're all basically the same game, as we all know. But I decided to get Rise of the Ronin, mostly because I know Capcom's going to put their stuff on sale.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good by summertime. So I imagine Dragon's Dogma will be maybe 20% off by then.
Yeah.
I get Rise of the Ronin because that seems like a pretty interesting game. It is a first-party published game of Team Ninja, another one after the two Neo games that did pretty well. But this is kind of the way I would reductively describe this is it's kind of what if Ghost of Tsushima was made by a Japanese studio.
Mm-hmm.
It's not based on the same story as that. It's based in the 1850s Japan, where America is sort of starting to meddle a bit in the affairs of Japan. And that means the introduction of guns and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, they already had guns.
Yeah, but they're definitely bringing more of that stuff into
more modern guns. Yeah.
Yeah. And, meddling in the affairs of Japan. So you are initially you start making character in the character creator, which is pretty well done, pretty in depth, probably not as good as the Dragon's Dogma 2 creator. But I made two different, I made a male and female character.
Mm-hmm.
The female was just kind of based off of one of the defaults they had that basically looked like Sailor Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Just blonde girl with long pigtails kind of thing. And they have a lot of interesting options for the hair, where you have a lot of options for bangs and, you know, adjusting different parts of the hair.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the men, they get none of that, which seems like stupid. Because, you know, men have bangs and all that. I was potentially going to make Tuxedo Mask, who has bangs of his own,
mm-hmm.
On his hair, but that didn't work, so I made Japanese Wolverine.
Yeah,
basically that gave him a pompadour instead of. There's no Wolverine style hair, and you obviously can't modify it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Than that, but have the same kind of facial hair there. The almost the Lemmy, but without the mustache.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, though you have pretty good facial hair options of the different parts with the beard, mustache stuff, and ways mm-hmm. that you can. You know, color it with the tips and all that kind of stuff. So there are definitely options there for that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, but the men don't get the ability to have bangs and the various other options that the women do for that stuff. But everything else you can edit pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But I just stuck with pretty basic options there. And so those two characters essentially as, I forget what particular group it is that is invading, but they're going through killing everybody they can find. And you are a pair of twins or siblings or whatever mm-hmm. that have sort of watched everybody else die and as are getting targeted as they're found out and get saved by this woman who is part of this clan. I think it's called Kuroso or something like mm-hmm. that. But basically they're introduced as the Veiled Edge, which is sort of a duo of samurai that you know are specialized in what they do, and their general goal at the beginning of the game is to try to mm-hmm. Mess with the shogunate and try to stop whatever bad plans they have. But that gets foiled as you are trying to take out the American commander Matthew Perry. Commodore Matthew Perry. I was like, wait, no, this isn't. It's a historical figure, but not. I didn't think about that at the moment. I was like, wait, why? What? Why is this guy named Matt Perry? Essentially,
yeah, yeah. It's a it's Commodore Matthew Perry, the guy who basically he's. If I mean, it, I learned about him from Rurouni Kenshin, but yeah, he's the guy who basically, more or less, forced Japan to open up.
Yeah, and he is on this boat where it's just kind of your tutorial of sorts. You did get a little bit earlier before that where you're doing some fight training and you get like options for different kinds of weapons. I think there's six types that you get for main weapons.
Mm-hmm.
It's like pole arms, spears, katanas, you get dual swords. There's like two others. I'm blanking on the names of those, mm-hmm. but you're essentially like in a Souls-like manner. You pick like a focus early on that just unlocks a couple of things for you right away.
Mm-hmm.
Skills that you kind of work through, but the Souls nature of this game is not all that deep. It is not Elden Ring,
yeah,
or anything like that. You essentially have bonfires all over the place that you can warp between, that kind of stuff. And as you rest there, on the specific, there are ones that are just for like checkpointing and some that are for actually resting and, mm-hmm. you know, changing up equipment, that kind of stuff, and warping between. But those will replenish enemies that are nearby when you do that. So you're going to have to be careful. But after you do some of that fighting, you go onto this boat to take out, and it shows you kind of how the stealth works, which mm-hmm. is pretty bare bones for the most part. You know, you just want to stay behind things when you're taking out enemies, but you do have like a grappling hook that you can use to grab like explosive barrels and throw them at enemies. That kind of stuff. And you can also use it to grab onto enemies and pull them to you. And as well as get up, you know, across gaps and that kind of stuff onto buildings. So there's that. There's also a glider. I've not gotten to that yet. About 3 hours, 3 or 4 hours in. So not too far, but I'm basically trying to get into Yokohama, which has been boarded off, at least for now. Mm-hmm. I need to get a travel permit to get over there. And I basically get to the town outside of where I want to get to for this big main mission. But they're like, oh, you got to go get a travel permit and go over to this other village. And the village has been taken over by bandits. So mm-hmm. you'll find these around villages that have been taken over by bandits. And that's kind of an Ubisoft-ish kind of thing. But once you kill the bandits there, it's usually like 5 to 7 from what I've seen so far.
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually like one higher tier enemy that takes a little bit more effort to kill, but you can kind of stealth everybody else out if you plan your attack pretty well.
Mm.
And so, or you can just go fight them head on. It'll be a little bit tougher that way, but you know, that's doable. But the big enemies, the higher tier enemies, usually you can't stealth kill them. So easily you'll take down a good chunk of their health, but you have to finish them off yourself. And in Team Ninja fashion, there's lots of cutting off arms and heads and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that. And yeah, it's kind of an open world game. Or it is an open world game where they kind of section off the side stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Another big part of it is the notion of bonds. Bonds to the areas, bonds to towns, and bonds to people. Mm. You can essentially have bonds with people that can become your allies and fight with you. Because there's a certain point in the story where you decide which of the two characters you make that you're going to main from then on. And I'll let people figure out why that happens. But
mm-hmm.
You become a Ronin, essentially a samurai without a master.
Mm.
That's is roaming around. You're kind of taking on some quests here and there. You kind of get to these towns. If you free them, you may have people there that'll give you quests to do. And as you do quests, you get higher mm-hmm. bonds with them. You can give them gifts, all that kind of stuff. But as you get higher bonds with the areas, it'll add more side stuff to do.
Mm.
That can be as simple as like, oh, there's cats to go find and pet. That's tied to the four main stats. There's strength, I think charm, there's two others I forget, but they have like one type of side quest thing that ties into each of those.
Mm-hmm.
That as you do them, you get specific points for each of those stats, as well as just general skill points. So you have on your skill tree some items that are just done with skill points, and some that need the specific ones for those stats.
Mm-hmm.
As they level up, and that's a little bit confusing initially, but once you kind of figure it out, it's not too hard to figure out. But as you're doing good things to help people out, you're kind of building up this karma meter. That's not an XP meter, but as you reach your next banner point, your bonfire, that transfers into skill points. So as you gather more of that, you don't want to stay. You want to generally check in with those pretty often, because that will just ensure you have the ability to unlock more stuff early on. But you can get pretty far with the early stuff you get. But yeah, you have your limited health stuff. Your Estus Flask equivalent is just medicinal pills.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff. But yeah, it definitely feels like what if a Ghost of Tsushima kind of game was made by a Japanese team, like Team mm-hmm. Ninja. There's less stealth. There's less like high grass in this game, as far as I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of spending more time if you're hiding, on the opposite side of the roof on buildings, or just hiding behind buildings watching people do their routes and figuring out when to get behind them and kill them off.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. But they also have the ability to sort of notice you and kind of come investigate. But yeah, I have not found a way to kind of break line of sight other than just booking it out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of giving up on that area completely. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff to this. It's a really fun kind of world to get around in.
Mm-hmm.
You start off with a horse pretty early on that, nicely enough, that when you call it, it basically automatically picks you up
mm-hmm.
To get on it. So you don't necessarily have to worry about trying to jump on, like, say, FF7 Rebirth, where
mm-hmm.
You're going to have to see where the chocobo shows up, and then you have to go up and get on it when you're waiting on it. So sometimes that gets a little weird, but here it just kind of pick you up in like one smooth motion that makes it pretty easy to do.
Mm.
And that's pretty fun. You can pick up stuff from the horse. You can attack from the horse, do all that. Your secondary items are pretty interesting, which you have, guns and bow and arrows and shuriken stars and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's very fun so far. Looking forward to put some more time into that. But yeah, that's a nice change of pace from like what FF7 has going on and a bunch of the other stuff that has been coming out this year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. The other game I'm playing that's new is Lightyear Frontier. This was an Xbox and PC game. Came out on Game Pass, so you can check it out there. Mm-hmm. It is basically it's a pretty standard open world crafting farming game. Essentially, you're kind of building out.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what the story is. You kind of seem to steal a ship to crash land on this planet with an exosuit mech that you use to go around and farm and collect materials and. Mm-hmm. Figure out, build new houses and all that kind of stuff to sleep in to pass the time. You also, got some mysteries to solve as you're trying to figure out, like, what's happened here and all that. This is humanity that has moved away from Earth as they ruined it and found new planets that are light years away that they have taken over. But it's still in early access, so that I don't think there's a ton of it to there, but they do have some interesting mechanics. Maybe the one annoyance I have is that your mech, if you try to get up on uneven terrain, it can just kind of flop over and you have to get out of it to flip it back up. So if you're just trying to get around quickly and maybe try to skip paths and that kind of stuff, you can easily just kind of tip your mech over and have to get out and flip it back over, that kind of stuff. But pretty solid game, and especially if you like getting achievements, that's a game that you can get a bunch of easy achievements in early on, as a lot of your first stuff that you do gets achievements. So that's a pretty solid and pretty peaceful. I haven't seen like enemies in it or anything yet, but that probably happens at a certain point. So there's Lightyear Frontier, Xbox and PC only at this point. Let's see. Also been playing more Deep Rock Galactic Survivor, which is the Vampire Survivors clone set in the Deep Rock Galactic universe. They put out their first big updates after launch that added a new map to it for people to enjoy, as well as adding some new perks and achievements and stuff like that. So I've been playing some more of that, enjoying that a lot. Not really too much to say. The new map has some new obstacles in it to be annoying and new enemies. So more challenging stuff. So there you go for that. Balatro, yeah. I've been putting some more time into. I finally beat Anti-8 to win a run. I've actually done it 3 times, so it felt like once I got the first one, successive ones were a bit easier, as I'm trying to beat win runs with all the base decks, because that unlocks a second deck for your starter decks. So I've got 3 of those, working on the 4th one. Been enjoying a lot. You unlock more jokers as you beat runs, that kind of stuff. So that kind of gets you with some good momentum as you start beating these runs and getting some better sets of jokers in there. So especially as some of the boss blinds that you run into on the final boss, the Anti-8 boss, can be just really brutal. Like what I get, one that flips over your jokers and shuffles their order, which is very annoying, because you generally set your jokers up in order with like multipliers, your times multipliers on the right side, because it sort of adds the malts and chips from left to right. So you kind of want your ones that'll make the numbers even bigger on the end. And so when it shuffles and you don't even know the order, it kind of makes it really hectic to kind of get the amount of chips you need for that. So managed to eke by the first win and have been getting a couple more a bit more easily. So that's been Balatro. Still going to keep playing it. More MLB The Show 24. Enjoying that a lot. I've gotten into July in the Road to the Show mode with my closer, with a female player. So she's doing pretty well, though having some rough times, because I think I'm at a point where she needs to grind some stats and get better to better deal with the tougher competition and the higher difficulty I'm on with the dynamic difficulty stuff that's going on. But other than that, still enjoying that a lot. And that's been pretty much what I've been playing. So, Brandon, how about you?
As for me, I finished Unicorn Overlord, and that game turned out to be, holy shit, does it get difficult towards the end. That game really makes you work hard to get that ending. The final boss of that game is basically this fucking immortal wizard dude who constantly keeps sending like just wave after wave of enemies at you. And when you finally do manage to get to kill him, not only does he have like a super strong shield, but you specifically have to have this one thing that is equipped in your inventory, and it has to be Elaine, the main guy that you're playing, who does it. He's the only one who can use it. And it has to be equipped in order to actually kill him. Because if you don't, he's going to, finish. He's going to keep like one bit of his health with him and then kick you away, which is typically what happens if you don't kill them the first time around in this game. But on top of that, he also is like slowly regenerating his health at the same time. So it's kind of a fight of attrition. But I ended up finishing it, and the game is absolutely going to be on my end of the year game of the year list. Like, I just straight up, this game was amazing, and Honestly, it's actually become like Vanillaware's biggest seller, apparently. Which is good, because I want this game to do really well. I want Vanillaware to do really well. The industry is better with them in it. But yeah, so with that finished, that meant I had a, you know, a big game-sized hole that needed to be filled. So I first started playing The Ascent, which is a game that you can get on PS Plus for, you know, an account. And basically, it's like Cyberpunk Diablo is sort of like the best way to say it. You basically are playing a indentured worker on an arcology structure that's on this planet that basically looks like it got hit with the Blade Runner hammer over and over again. Yeah, I mean, there's really not much else to say about it. It's literally just Diablo, but cyberpunk and with guns. It's definitely enjoyable, and it's definitely got like a lot of lore behind it. They're trying to build a universe here, so it's fun. I like playing it, but it does have some low budget issues here and there. But on top of that, I decided, because I had wanted to play this game back when it came out, but I didn't want to pay full price for it because there were issues when it first came out. Among the other things, the fact that it has like really low production values for a game as ambitious as it is. And that's a little game called Wanted Dead. This is a action-adventure game that is sort of like... do you guys remember a game that came out for the Wii a few years ago called The Devil's Third? It was like a game that it wasn't made by Team Ninja. It was by the guy who founded Team Ninja, and he went Itagaki. And that game was like this supposed to be like this big concept action piece that ended up like being really kind of dumb. Well, Wanted Dead is sort of like the platonic ideal of what that game was trying to be. Essentially, you're playing this woman who is named Olivia Stone, who is the member of this like task force called it's like the Zombie Squad or something. But basically, you're working for like security for like a private corporation in this futuristic version of Hong Kong, where you are. Essentially, you were like a former war criminal that was hired on to be a part of this as like sort of like a in, you know, trade for like getting out on with sentence served, with time served or whatever. And I haven't gotten very far in the game, but the game is heavily implying that at some point in this game's history, NATO and China got into a massive world war, and China ended up winning it. So basically all the megacorps ended up taking over as a result. And what's neat about this game is that it's essentially a game that's trying to do just a bunch of different things at once. If you remember those sort of like B-tier action games that were like plentiful on the PS2, this is basically a lot like one of those games. The actual gameplay is... it's good, but it's also very unpolished. There's a lot of like, your primary weapon is like you've got a katana and you've got a pistol and you have a sidearm of some kind. So it could be a machine gun or a shotgun or a sniper rifle, you know, stuff like that that you can customize and all this. And the game just kind of keeps trying to add all this stuff onto it. Every so often, you can come across a chainsaw that you can use. When you're actually like at the headquarters of the game before you go out to another mission, there's stuff you can do. There's like conversations you can have. They have like a claw game and arcade machines that you can play, figures to collect, stuff like that. It's a very ambitious game. But it's very obvious that they didn't really have the kind of production values that they wanted. The character models can be kind of robotic. There's a lot of clipping. The enemy AI is kind of all over the place. The audio mixing is kind of all over the place, weirdly enough. Some characters are really quiet for one instance and then like blaring loud in another. And also there's the dialogue, which was clearly written by someone where English is like a second or third language. So there are times when it's like it almost comes off like it was written by ChatGPT or something like that. But in spite of all that, it's surprisingly very enjoyable. I'm actually liking it. And it's just like, I'm wondering like what insane shit they're going to throw at me next. I recently had like a fucking mini game that was based around trying to eat ramen. It was fucking insane. But, and then on top of that, I also got a copy of The Invincible, which is this, very nerdy-ass sci-fi game from this Polish developer that's based on the novel of the same name by Stanisław Lem. And it's basically about you, who is a cosmonaut on this spaceship who was supposed to go to some other planet, but you end up inadvertently in a planet that is apparently undiscovered. And so you and your fellow team of cosmonauts decide to go down and, you know, study, collect samples, stuff like that. And then you wake up without having problems remembering what had just happened in the middle of what's like a barren desert wasteland. And I'll be honest, if anything, this game really does sell the idea that you are a cosmonaut on this barren fucking landscape, because it is astound. First of all, the actual environmental graphics are insanely gorgeous. Like, this game sells like being on the surface of Mars really hard. And like the way that you have to navigate this place is like very in character. You know, you can't just make big jumps. That would be stupid. So you have to like carefully climb on things and carefully walk. Cause remember, you're in a spacesuit, you know, shit like that. You know, it can limit your movement and you have to be careful not to, you know, make cuts in your suit or anything. And all the tech is like really well designed. It's like that kind of retro futuristic vibe, but it all looks very like workable. Like it actually is something you could use. That said, the actual character models are ass. They are very robotic. They're kind of low texture. There's definitely clipping issues. It's very janky, but otherwise, not really that many complaints. I am liking the story so far. The story is really good. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Danrib, what about you?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a weird week. We just got through GDC and we also just got through PAX East. I went to GDC. For the listeners who aren't really familiar with that is, that's the Game Developers Conference. And it's not exactly something that, you know, a typical gamer would want to go to, because, you know, unlike PAX, there really aren't a whole lot of demos on the show floor. So unless you're somebody who really wants to work in the game industry or tech in general, I wouldn't recommend GDC. But if you're somebody who's actually a part of the industry and likes to see like what innovative technologies and services that a bunch of gaming companies and a bunch of gaming adjacent companies are into, GDC is totally my recommendation. Obviously, you know, a few weeks ago I mentioned that I was laid off from EA, so I am a free agent and I'm looking for a job, and you know, GDC is typically a place to go to. And mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, you know, I am, you know, one of almost 18,000, and you know, there were a lot of people at GDC who were laid off as well. So it's funny just seeing like the various trends that we see over the years. Like 2020, obviously, there was no convention. 2021, it was all about like NFTs. 2022 and 2023, we're seeing a bunch of AI stuff. And then, you know, this year now we're seeing just a whole bunch of people laid off. And it's pretty cool just talking to everybody with their experiences. And at the same time, I was also talking to a lot of students, you know. The students don't really affect me and what I want to do, but, you know, they're people that want to pick my brain and see what's up. And, you know, I'm not going to lie to people. I just told them the industry sucks right now. It is what it is. But yeah, like a big part of this for me, especially, is just networking with a lot of people. I've been growing my LinkedIn brand and that's been pretty fun. But yeah, I did play some games, especially on the first day. On day one, on Monday, we actually had the Mix Showcase, which was an event that was done with Kind of Funny this year, and that was kind of similar to Day of the Devs, where you see a lot of indie games being featured. So I got to play some cool stuff there. One game that I did play was Star Racer, and that's a game that Filippo actually previewed earlier this year. Basically, it's a cross of F-Zero and Star Fox done with Super NES graphics. So, mm-hmm. you know, you have your typical race on the 3D, 2D plane, and when you're up in the air, that's when the game turns into Star Fox. So it's pretty cool having all that speed and then worrying about shooting everyone off the course, and then that was really fun. And then we had the a small Day of the Devs booth, and I played a few games there. First one up is Surf Club. Surf Club is about this girl who went on summer vacation, I guess, and, you know, she met someone there. And, you know, you walk around the beach. This was a really short demo. So, you know, you learn about the story. You walk around the beach. And then all of a sudden someone asks you, hey, let's go for one more surf. And then the game pretty much changes into surf mode. And you end up just riding the waves. You know, you go up the wave like you would a half pipe in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. And then just do tricks from there. I tried a whole different bunch of button combinations. But my character appeared to be doing the same thing over and over, so I don't know like what they were trying to show there, but it was pretty fun, all things considered. And then after that, it was pretty much over. So this is like a 10 to 15 minute demo, really short. Another one I played is called Crow Country. This is pretty much a horror game, but yeah, the visuals are very much reminiscent of original Resident Evil 1-2. PlayStation 1 kind of graphics, and yeah, like the player models really reminded me of what I remember from the original Final Fantasy 7, you know, where Cloud looks like a bunch of balls put together. So it was pretty funny in that regard. But yeah, the controls were a little cumbersome. It's not exactly tank controls, but it was a little frustrating trying to shoot at people. So for example, if you pick up a gun, you have to like hold one button and then move the stick, but there's really no way to see where you're actually hitting. Like there is a reticule there, but I found it really hard to move around. And like this demo, what was it, collectathon, where you had to like find like 30 things, and I didn't find a single one of them. It died pretty quickly, and it was mainly because of my difficulty with the controls. The other game I played was Hyper Light Breaker. You know, people will be familiar with Hyper Light Drifter, which is like one of the best indie third person action games available. Hyper Light Breaker is a little different in the sense where it's 3D. It takes a page away from I'm trying to remember their last game, but like the graphics are very similar to that of The Pathless, and it's just cool seeing, you know, all the neons and cyans and purples you know, put together. And from what I played, the gameplay was really fun. You have a projectile weapon as well as your sword, which you can hack and slash. And yeah, it was a really simple demo, but like from what I played, it was really fun. So yeah, that was that. I was there for about 4 days. PAX East happened. I did not go to that, so you know, I got to catch up on some of the gaming that I wanted to do. And yeah, the main thing I played, of course, as I have been playing for the past few weeks, is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I'm about 80 hours in now. I'm on chapter 12. There are 14 chapters, and I've gotten to a point where the game really opens up. You know, every like previous chapter was really focused on a certain area in the game. So whether that be the Grasslands, Corel, Cosmo Canyon, whatever it may be. So I just like got past the Nibel section. You know, I'm not going to really talk about what happened there. But if you're familiar with Final Fantasy VII, you should. And yeah, we meet Cid, and all of a sudden we have access to a whole bunch of places. And it was kind of frustrating in that regard, because I didn't really leave a region until I know that I fully completed it. And while this part of the game like requires me to go back to the Gold Saucer, and in Corel, you know, that region where it's called, there are two things that I couldn't get before because you had to come back, and that this is that point. But what's frustrating is that every region added like two or three side quests that are completely new. And, you know, I'm not going to complain about more content, but like as somebody that, you know, really went out of the way to complete things before moving forward, it just feels really daunting. And it's very similar to what happened in Final Fantasy 16, where, you know, you get to the final chapter there, and then all of a sudden, like, you have all these requests everywhere. I'm pretty sure it's the case where I can go ahead and finish the game whenever I want, but, you know, knowing me, I'm the kind of guy that wants to finish as much as possible. I'm not going to platinum the game because it requires a hard mode playthrough, which the only way to unlock hard mode is to like beat the game once, and that's pretty frustrating for me. So when I do roll credits in the game, like I want to know that I'm done. And yeah, so that's not going to happen until I actually get through all these side quests. So that's a little frustrating. I spent most of the morning this morning just doing chocobo races, and that's really fun. Like, I'm sure you've heard or read a lot of reviews where people talk about like the cumbersomeness of the mini games, and you know, for the most part, they're really fun, especially chocobo racing. Like, it actually feels like it should be a separate game, which, you know, funny enough, there are separate chocobo racing games in Square Enix's repertoire of games, so it's not surprising at all. But yeah, it's really well done. You accelerate, you have a drifting component like you would in Mario Kart games. There's full-on items. Each chocobo has their own special abilities that you can use to help you in the races. My favorite one has a jumping ability. And, you know, there are others as well. And, like, it's just really cool, like, knowing how much effort was really put into all this. Like, I know we're talking about the game's bloatedness when we talk about the minigames, but they're all really well done. I've also been playing Princess Peach Showtime. I picked this up on Friday. And, yeah, like, it's pretty much what I thought it would be. It's, you know, a very, quote-unquote, easy Nintendo game. Except, you know, if you want to collect every collectible that there is in every world available. I've beaten the first two levels, which is, you know, pretty much just a demo. But, yeah, I've gotten a hand on Sword Fighter Peach as well as Ninja Peach. And, you know, Ninja Peach wasn't as cool as I thought she'd be. Like, I thought she'd be, like, a full-on, like, fighter. But it's actually more about the stealth component. Her special ability is... unraveling a scroll to like hide in the background, and there's a lot of stealth there. So stealth in a 2D pseudo 3D game, you know, isn't as fun as it could be. But yeah, I'm sure there are other levels and, you know, Peach transformations that to look forward to. I know there have been complaints about the game's performance. I have only noticed that in the load screens, which take place like in between every level, and it shows a moving curtain. And, like, that's hilarious because, like, I don't know if anybody here has finished the remake for Super Mario RPG, but there's a sequence in that game where you see somebody hiding between three curtains, and the animation done there is absolutely beautiful. So, you know, it just goes to show, like, the funniness that, or, you know, just the weirdness to see the various Nintendo developers, like, deal with their different levels of jank. You know, obviously we have... Tears of the Kingdom being as polished as it is, and then you have like Game Freak and Pokemon Company just totally screwing things up with Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. So yeah, Princess Peach Showtime is definitely a game that is a good introduction to, you know, third person action games and platformers. I remember having my girlfriend play the demo for a little bit, and she has some trouble like jumping from left to right, which is, you know, otherwise a simple thing for hardcore gamers. But yeah, for what it is, I'm having fun with it, and you know, I wait to get further, but for the time being, FF7 Rebirth will be what I'm going to be playing until I finish it. And yeah, that's about it.
All right, yeah, let's get to some news. And first up here, new week, new Game Pass editions.
Yeah,
for the next week or so. Let's see what we got available now. As I mentioned, Lightyear Frontier is on there. Emily the Show 24 is on there, so you'll be able to check those out now. Let's see. Also available now, The Quarry for console. That is, I think, their latest.
Yeah.
Of that type of game. So we'll see how that one, that one's one you can check out if you've missed it. Let's see. Evil West, console and PC. That is the kind of... B game in terms of, you know, being a solid kind of dumb game that you can just play and have fun and not really take it that seriously.
Yeah.
Kind of an old west, a dark old west game about taking out vampires and all that kind of stuff. So,
yep.
There you go. Let's see, that's it for the stuff that's already available. Coming up here on PC, March 26th, Terra Invicta. See, about an alien invasion has fractured humanity in seven ideological factions, each with a unique vision for the future. So leading your chosen faction to take control of Earth's nations. Sounds like a a 4X game, like a Civ. I'm going to guess maybe more space-focused kind of Civ game. So yeah, there you go. Yeah, let me see here. Yeah, strategy, simulation, grand strategy, 4X, war. Those are the tags it has on Steam, so you can check that out. That's in early access, so there you go. March 28th, I think that is Thursday, Diablo 4 is the first of the Activision Blizzard games that is coming to Game Pass on console and PC. So you can join in. I assume the next season starts around then. I think they've been talking about that. I might download that because I don't want to put in the disc I have for it, so on PS5, so that might be how I check it out. Also, March 28th, Hot Wheels Unleashed 2 Turbocharged for console and PC. It's the second of those kind of kart racing Hot Wheels games that are supposed to be pretty good. So you can check that one out. Also on March 28th, I think this was a bit of a surprise, Open Roads is coming to Game Pass, console and PC. That's the new game from the developer of Gone Home and Tacoma. That's their newest game, Open Roads, that had a tumultuous development with What's-His-Face kind of being a very abusive boss that they had to kind of separate him from the rest of the development team.
Yep.
And kind of get that back on track.
Mm-hmm.
And also has Kerry Russell as a voice actor in that game. So
yep.
You got some interesting stuff there. So that's one you can also check out on the 28th.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to trying that one out. Like, it's actually really rare for Annapurna to support something like Day One on Game Pass. So yeah, looking forward to trying that one out. Although I do want to see if it.
Yeah, I don't believe so from what I've seen, but maybe that's a surprise. Let's see. On April 1st, you can check out Ark Survival Ascended. I believe it's next Monday. So that is the UE5 version of the original Ark game for PC and the Xbox Series X and S. So you can check that out. I assume that's not a 400 gig game, some huge, ridiculous thing.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, F123 on EA Play for cloud on April 2nd, so you can check that out on the xCloud stuff there. And then last one here, console and PC, April 2nd, Super Hot Mind Control Delete. That's a very fun kind of roguelite version of Super Hot that's worth checking out if you have not checked it out yet. So there you go for that. Yeah, I think that's it here.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah, some good stuff.
Oh, yeah, some actually pretty good stuff.
And then let's get to some release dates here. Broken Roads finally got a release date for PlayStation, Xbox, and PC on April 10th. That is the Mad Max-ish kind of narrative RPG set in Western Australia, post-apocalypse, where you're kind of doing all your turn-based RPG stuff. Yeah, that looks pretty neat. I think that's a game that you said you're interested in, Brandon.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a couple weeks away here.
Yeah. Basically, it's a post-apocalyptic RPG that takes place in Western Australia. So basically just Western Australia.
So yeah, there you go. That'll be out here soon. Shortly after on that, Harold Halibut. Is getting a release. That was a Kickstarter game quite a while ago. That was sort of a claymation game that they finally have finished. That'll be out April 16th for PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. PS4 and Xbox One versions will be a bit later. This one will also be on Game Pass. So you can check that out. That's sort of a, I think it's just an adventure game. But yeah, it has a really good look to it and all that. So that'll be one worth checking out there. And then, yeah, 2 days later on the 18th, Final Fantasy 16 second paid DLC, The Rising Tide will be out. That'll be $20 on its own or $25 for the expansion pass to get both of the expansions there. That'll be, yeah, focusing on the story around the missing water icon that has not shown up in the story. So
yeah.
So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Some more of that. And then, yeah, in May 23rd, about 2 months from now, Haunty will be out.
Mm-hmm.
It's Haunt with two eyes on the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a spooky adventure game.
Yeah.
Featuring you as a ghost. This is coming out on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. That'll also be on Game Pass. This is one I think was on one of the Day of the Devs shows last year.
Mm-hmm.
That is looking really cool. So that'll be out here in a couple years,
mm-hmm.
or a couple of months. And yeah, a bit of a surprise, the Shin Megami Tensei V Vengeance
mm-hmm.
has gotten pushed up. I think yep. it was supposed to be June 21st. It's now coming out a week earlier on June 14th. I think right after Summer Game Fest starts. So
mm-hmm.
you'll kind of move right into that if you miss that. But that'll have the base game and the expansion stuff built in. Sort of like Persona 5 Royal, kind of adding a bunch of new stuff to it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, people will be able to check that out on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And Switch people will be able to get the upgraded version here for full price, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to offer any sort of discount for that. And then, yeah, the last date here, Dustborn
mm-hmm.
has a date of August 20th now.
Yep.
It's on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC, and that is sort of a neat-looking, story-driven action-adventure game
mm-hmm.
Where you are doing all of your stuff by shooting out the power of words
yep.
at people. That has a pretty neat look to it. And that's published by Quantic Dream, one of their first couple of games that they're publishing. So
mm-hmm.
that looks neat.
All right.
So yeah. Yeah, any of that stuff you're looking to check out, Brandon?
Well, definitely Broken Roads is something I'm looking forward to. Dustborn, maybe. I'm going to need to be a bit more convinced on it, though. I want to see what the response is when it actually comes out and other people get to play it first.
Yeah. How about you, Dan Rib?
Yeah, for me, it's probably the DLC for Final Fantasy 16. None of these newer games really speak to me all that much, although Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance, I'm not actually sure what that is. Is that a 4K re-release of what came out on Switch?
That, and it has extra content to it, sort of like Persona 5 Royal.
Gotcha. I never actually opened my copy, so I might be interested in that. But
yeah, so you can pay for another version that you can play. But yeah, that's that. We'll get to some other news here. GDC had some news of other games getting announced.
Mm-hmm.
This one was interesting from the developers of Fights and Tight Spaces, the really good turn-based strategy deck builder game.
Mm-hmm.
They announced a sequel called Knights in Tight Spaces, a medieval version of the game where you're playing as knights, being able to do a bunch of melee attacks, sword attacks, bow attacks, all that kind of stuff, kind of expanding it a bit more.
Mm.
And it's just it's a really good name for a sequel to Fights in Tight Spaces.
Mm.
Just one of the better names I've seen for a sequel there. So is that. We got an update on Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra, which is the new name for the Captain America Black Panther game that Skydance was working on. We got a name for that. It's supposed to be out next year. And this was part of the Unreal Engine showcase at GDC. So we got a nice little trailer, story trailer. So that will be featuring four characters. So two more in addition to mm-hmm. Captain America and the Black Panther of that era, mm-hmm. Which is named Azuri, the grandfather of T'Challa. You also get to play as Gabriel Jones of the Howling Commandos
mm-hmm.
and the Wakanda spy leader, Nanali.
Mm-hmm.
So that's looking pretty good. And mm-hmm. I believe this is the game that Amy Hennig is leading the development on. So looks like a good return to form for her.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I'm just glad she's like being able to actually make stuff again. Because like her last two major projects basically fell through because they either canceled it or pulled funding.
Yeah.
So yeah, she's actually going to be able to get something out there now.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, Skydance is definitely a company with money. I think they also produced the latest Top Gun movie. So, you know, there has to be some money in the bandstand for that. But yeah, I'm glad, like, this is a game that they finally, like, uncovered the leaves on. Like, you know, anything that Amy Hennig attaches her name to is going to have, like, you know, the eyes of several hardcore people in the industry, just because of, like, you know, the kind of stuff that she left, especially with Naughty Dog. But yeah, like, looking at Marvel 1943, so this trailer launched during GDC, but I didn't actually have a chance to watch it until yesterday. And yeah, I was really impressed. Like, aside from the fact that we didn't really get any gameplay here, you know, compared to something like Marvel's Avengers, like, which had all sorts of Uncanny Valley characters in it, both T'Challa and, you know, Captain America, as far as, like, the models here. Like, you know, I don't really care that they don't look like, you know, the ones that we saw in the MCU. And at the same time, like, knowing that it's 1943 definitely adds a nice setting to it all. And I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, like, I guess, like, if anything, I'm tired of seeing, like, the broken Captain America shield. But, like, aside from that, like, this looks fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. That'll be out next year. Let's see here. Bellatro. Bellatro's been doing well. They announced they hit 250,000, I think, about a week after launch. And they've updated to say that they have reached 1 million copies sold here in about 26 days, which is incredible for this kind of game. Yeah, they seem like they are planning a lot of fun things for future updates, as well as, I think, a mobile version of the game. So that'll be cool to see. And yeah, they are kind of happy that this thing did really well, so they can kind of, the few people that are working at the developer, kind of able to take a break and not be as pressured to get things out as fast as possible. So that'll be pretty great here. So yeah, this is awesome to see.
Yeah.
And I did see on Steam that's coming out. So I think it's already in early access. Is a game that is not like a clone of this. It's a roulette roguelite game called Bingle Bingle. That looks pretty neat, but from what I've seen, people are saying it's a little bit limited by the rules of roulette, how much you can fuck with that versus poker. But there's people trying out this. And what other casino games are there that we can fuck around with? And so, yeah. There's some stuff out there. But yeah, Bellatro, well worth checking out. And then, yeah, we had this, the Shadows of the Damned remaster, which I think is called Shadows of the Damned Hella Remastered. I think that's out next year. Or might be this year, I forget. Yeah, that's out this year. No specific time frame for that. But in part of that announcement, we found out that Shinji Mikami has essentially formed his studio already called Kamui. I think it formed last fall, like in October. Yeah, in the Tokyo registries for companies.
Yeah.
So we know that he is working on this remaster in some form. Probably mostly as a consultant, I assume. But I believe they also have all the voice actors back from the original game. So they're making some good progress on that game. So yeah, good to see he's back in action.
Yeah. And he's like redoing a sort of cult game that he was involved with Suda 51. I played that game back in the day. It is very fun. It is also extremely juvenile. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember like people praising that game when that came out, but I may be.
It was definitely kind of a cult favorite.
Yeah.
Because people are like, oh, is it going to be RE4 great? And it's like, no.
No, no.
But it's got a lot of the Resident Evil kind of dumb charm to it. Especially when he treats the gun like his dick. So that's the kind of level of humor you're getting there.
Yep.
So yeah, there's that. We got news here out of Larian Studios saying they are officially done with the Baldur's Gate series.
Yeah, don't blame them.
That doesn't mean they're done, like, updating Baldur's Gate 3, but they're not planning any, like, major expansions or anything. for that. And I imagine part of that is also probably Wizards of the Coast probably taking the huge success of this game and trying to probably raise the cost of using the license and all that. And probably any other things they can do to kind of squeeze more money out of this stuff. Much like Marvel has done with some of their licensing for video games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not too surprising that they're basically saying at this point, we want to do something new for our next game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that even means that they're doing like another, I forget the other game they did before Baldur's Gate 3. But yeah, like they're not returning to any previous properties they've worked on. So
mm-hmm.
That'll be cool to see. That'll probably be at least a few years before we even see what that is. But
oh, yeah. I want them to take their time. They've earned it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, Larian is definitely on the list now. So, you know, they don't have to work with a licensed IP. I'd love to see them do something, like, completely original because we know that they can do it. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if they can, like, branch out from something aside from the typical isometric or games that really just are better with a mouse and keyboard. I want to see them do something fully console oriented.
Yeah, they've definitely done that. They did a Skyrim-style open RPG, or more Oblivion, I think, at the point.
Mm-hmm.
But that came out. But yeah, like a bunch of studios from like Northern and Eastern Europe, it was a very rough and janky
mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. But they have definitely worked a lot on making more polished and fleshed out games at this point. So.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see what else they do at this point. So, yeah, there you go. Good news on that front.
Mm-hmm.
Some more good news. Valve announced the new form of their like family sharing stuff on Steam. Mm-hmm. I think they're calling it Steam Family Game Sharing Program.
Mm-hmm.
That basically is replacing what the Steam Family Sharing and Steam Family View features that essentially allows you to create your family, and I think it has to be physically located in the same address that they can tell. I'm sure people will try and figure out ways to spoof IPs and all that to appear to be in the same location, but I assume they've done all the work to try to thwart that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you can have up to 6 members in your family. And you can share games in each member's library, as they have the term shareable games. As a family sharing is a feature that any developer can choose to opt out of for any reason at any time. And some games are ineligible for sharing due to technical reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they've mentioned that some of the current big games that support it out of the gates will be like Helldivers 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Balatro, Cyberpunk 2077, Elden Ring, and Hogwarts Legacy. And yeah, while playing a game that a family member owns, you create your own save files, earn your own achievements, have access to workshop files and other stuff on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And when you purchase a game, it still remains in your ownership and only appears in your own library.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 members in the same family cannot play 1 copy of a game at the same time. Mm-hmm. But I think the big thing is that 2 or more members can play different games at the same time. I think the way that this stuff worked originally is if, you know, Brandon and I were in a family and I started playing Balatro and he wanted to jump in and play, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn, he would have to wait for me to finish.
Yep.
Or there would be maybe a way to kick me off at some point. But now
everybody
can play games at the same time. But if two or more people want to play the same game, they have to buy more copies, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So you need 2 or more, however many you need for the whole group that wants to play. So there's that kind of thing. They do have an FAQ that has some funny questions to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, let's see here. Yeah, what happens if the game I want to play for my Steam family is in use? If another member of your Steam family already owns the game with identical DLC, Steam will launch that copy instead.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What if a family member is caught cheating or committing fraud while playing my shared games? Your Steam family privileges may be revoked, and your account may also be VAC banned if a member of your family, your Steam family, playing a game from you cheats or commits fraud. In addition, not all back protected games are shareable. Mm-hmm. We recommend you only invite trusted household members to your Steam family. Mm-hmm. And as always, never give your passwords to anyone. Basically, don't invite your shady friends.
Yeah.
Try to cheat in games.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of stuff like that. So, yeah, they got an FAQ you can check for all the various ways that you might think are necessary to know about.
Mm-hmm.
For that, so yeah, they do go through what about games, like adult games in your family, how that stuff shared. And it's like, yeah, you can mark games as private, but you know, if you have those kind of games you maybe don't want to share in the first place, that kind of stuff. So yeah, seems pretty good for people that have a bunch of games but don't necessarily want to rebuy them all for their kids or their other family members in the house.
Yeah.
So seems like a solid expansion of that program.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see here. Oh yeah, some bad news coming out of Rockstar Games.
Yeah.
It seems like management has been pushing for a return to office for their staff members working on GTA 6. And urging them to move back into the office.
Mm-hmm.
I think 5 days a week is what they want. Or else the game might end up being delayed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that could happen anyway. But also it seems to be angering a lot of the people they've hired, especially those they hired remotely. Not liking the surprise of being told they need to be, you know, moving closer to the office or driving in every day, that kind of stuff. Suppose they're going to start trying to get people to come back in April. And yeah, kind of doing this on short notice is leading a lot of people to consider quitting and all that. And they try to push like security and quality of the product as the main reason Rockstar would be instituting the mandate to return to office. Seems like somebody who wished to remain anonymous to avoid possible retaliation that development on GTA 6 has started falling behind, and saying that this has leadership at Rockstar nervous and worried about the game missing the 2025 window and slipping into 2026. There's another big reason the company is pushing for a return to office in April.
Because
I imagine Take-Two would very much like it to be out next year for their fiscal year plans, but the way the Rockstar games have sold of late, they'd be perfectly fine either way, as far as anybody really cares, because those games will continue to keep selling to keep them afloat for a while. But yeah, this seems like a shady situation they've been put into, especially because, you know, when they talk about potentially delaying, that just means like, we need to do this. We might have to crunch as a result of this to get this game out in time if it's falling behind. And it's like, I'd rather let it slip and let people work the way that they want to. Especially for the people that were hired remotely. Being told they need to, get into the office is just a pretty shitty way to handle things. So yeah, there's the weird situation that's surrounding GTA 6 right now.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, that's dumb as all hell. I mean, like the one sliver of like data that would like make me even want to consider Rockstar's side is the fact that the last few weeks in GTA 6 were a kid looking at their parents' screen or whatever it may be, and like that sucks. But yeah, there has to be a way to like one, avoid that. But yeah, the main thing is, you know, especially if you were hired remotely from the beginning, being asked to come in is just totally stupid. I know a bunch of people who have like uprooted their lives, you know, to go someplace because the company told them to, only to like, you know, get laid off like a month later. So yeah, just dumb.
Yeah, hopefully they find a better solution there.
Mm-hmm.
or that, or just be resigned to the fact that it's just going to take a while.
Mm.
It's not like that has ever happened to Rockstar before.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's see. Our last story here in another awful situation. Kotaku's editor-in-chief has resigned over their new edict from management at GO Media and Jim Spanfeller that they should be essentially inverting the focus of their team from, you know, favoring news over guides to favoring guides over news. Jen Glennon has resigned this past week.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, put out a letter here that Aftermath is hosting. Yeah, saying, after careful consideration, I've concluded that the current management structure and decision-making process at GO Media are not aligned with my values and goals for Kotaku. I firmly believe a decision to invert Kotaku's editorial strategy to deprioritize news in favor of guides is fundamentally misguided. Given the current infrastructure of the site, this decision is directly contradicted by months of traffic data. It shows an astonishing disregard for the livelihoods of the remaining writers and editors who work here. And yeah... she has on Twitter called him an herb, Jim Spanfeller, as much as a lot of the current and former Kotaku people have been talking shit about Jim Spanfeller, because he has been a very tumultuous leader of this company, of the various companies. You know, he let Deadspin's writers, the original writers they had, run off and start a new studio or a new company called Defector.
Mm-hmm.
And then had, you know, new people there, and then out of the blue sold that site off, laid off all those people, even if they were part of a union. And that site right now, Deadspin, is being used to advertise casino stuff. That's just a dead, you know, referral site now. And, you know, Kotaku has been fucked around with by GO Media for the last couple of years here.
Yeah.
Supposedly they are being asked to create 50 guides a week at the site.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think these are like full guides on games. I think they're very much like the things that Kotaku tends to do. Like,
yeah,
you know, 10 things you should know about this game when getting started. You know, here's collectible in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Here's where they're at. You know, that kind of basic article stuff. Which their site is not really well designed to do a bunch of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the 50 guides a week, I think there are maybe 7 or so writers. So you're asking them essentially to put out at least one a day, if not more, to meet that for a week. And it's just, it seems like an entire plan that's based on trying to get all these people to quit. So one, you wouldn't have to fire them and pay them severance, especially as these people are part of a union, and then probably replace them with people that can use AI to create, you know, SEO generating guides, that kind of stuff, very basic things to essentially mess with the value of the site and turn it into something completely different. Which seems to be the thing that a lot of these money men behind a lot of these media sites just don't see the value in, you know, news and all that. And as Jen said here, like, they do pretty well on all their articles and hits and all that stuff. They're making money generally every, you know, month and all that. The only reason they want to do this is because they want to make more money. They want to have infinite growth and kind of just making a solid, you know, solid profits every month is not enough for these people. And that's the thing. It's the big problem with the big media sites at this point is that they don't want to fund, you know, just people doing important journalism work. They want, you know, stuff that makes more money, which is all like the lowest common denominator stuff. And, you know, there are much better sites for guides if you just want guides. You know, GameFAQs still does that stuff really well. There's Strategy Wiki, IGN has good wiki stuff.
Oh yeah,
for that. So yeah.
Yeah, this is definitely a beyond brain dead thing by management, unless you know the conspiracy theories about trying to get the staff to quit as a means of not paying them severance are true, which, you know, I also would not be surprised. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, all of us have been in, you know, the industry writing side for, you know, close to 2 decades now, and we all know how hard it is to write a guide. Like, you know, it's hard enough to write about our opinion, but, you know, writing a guide where you have to have all this specific information and write it in such a way where it's easy for just about anybody who needs help to read is, yeah, that's super difficult. So asking for 50 a week with the amount of staff that they have is absolutely impossible. And the funny thing is, like, you know, you mentioned AI a while ago, Chris, but like, let's not forget the AI that's just already tied into SEO. Like, for example, I have trouble like with side quests for FF7 Rebirth all the time. So when I Google something, like, I already see like an immediate answer formulated by Google, which is information that they just took from other sites, whether it be IGN or GameFAQs. So, you know, they're not getting the click anyway, and like, that's just bother, and it's just really sad. So I'm expecting Kotaku to turn this around sooner than later. I think they might have already been beginning to do this, but yeah, like, this is absolutely dumb, and it makes you wonder like where they are with this. I mean, like, again, nobody goes to Kotaku for a guide. They're like one of the top three sites for actual gaming news, and while they have guides, like, it's not a focus. It never has been for them.
Yeah, and like Google and other search site, search is kind of just getting infested with AI garbage in there, just gumming up the search results you're trying to usually find.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of just makes it harder to find, you know, specific answers for things, especially on YouTube or Google, where you get YouTube videos for when you're looking for guide stuff, and it's like, I'm not watching a video to find this one piece of information, you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, search is just kind of a garbage dump at this point, usually. So, and yeah, hopefully the people at Kotaku can find a better place to work at if they are just forcing them out at this point. We'll see how that goes. They've still been putting up some news pieces, so I don't know if they have a time frame for when they're supposed to start this stuff, but yeah. We'll have to monitor that and see how it goes. But yeah, more disappointing stuff going on. And yeah, I think that's where we're going to end it this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week on Easter weekend with some more news and such. If nothing too much happens, I'll probably do a quick little guide for what's coming out here for the next couple of months.
Sounds good.
Because, yeah, we managed to survive the first few months of this year, even though the ability to actually beat games and play all the things we want, maybe not so much, but we've at least gotten some things done. And yeah, we got the summer coming up, or spring for Ohio here. We're still in the 30s and 40s. We've not begun to have a spring yet, as is tradition. There's no consistent weather until maybe May. But yeah. Yeah, we'll be back next week with a new slate of news. And if you enjoy the show, if you've let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that are also looking forward to some cool games here over the next few months.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be back next week with a new slate of stuff to talk about and some new games. Maybe existing games. We've had time to actually put some more of our time and money into. So, yeah, we'll see y'all next time. Have a good one.